liked with your introduction was that you said outside of parenting, and that in itself is huge because outside of parenting is a concept that not a lot of mothers understand. Yeah. You know, our life becomes defined by being a parent, right? Yeah. And mothering. Yeah. And so I love that. I love the fact that you qualified it. You said outside of parenting. So I already said that you're a woman and you have a life. And then you said you hang out with your girlfriends. And I'm like, how do you do that? Please tell me how. Hi there, and welcome to the Resilient Mother Podcast. This is Catherine Tyson Sewell, and I am flying a bit solo tonight. And I'm just excited to just get started with our guest this evening. Of course, on the Resilient Mother Podcast, we just bring you stories of resilience and our mamas that are out there doing it and making things happen and just, you know, carrying it all and also trying to find some time for ourselves and try to save some for ourselves. So today we do have Ms. Deidre Clark, who has brought her story to the Resilient Mother Podcast. And I want to welcome you, Deidre, to our show. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we just want to get started. So can you just tell me a little bit about yourself and kind of, you know, what are we talking about today?
So I guess a little bit about me. I'm born and raised in Birmingham, Alabama. I am one of six. I come from a really blended family. And so both my parents had children before they got together and my dad had a couple while they were together. Fun times. I come from, you know, a pretty, I guess, big family. And I am now mother to my own two children. I have two sons. They are Nehemiah, who's about to be 14 in a couple of weeks. Oh my gosh. And Akili, who is 11. When I am not parenting them and I find some time for myself, I am almost always hanging out with my girlfriends. And maybe doing some writing or trying to find a new book to love. So, yeah.
Awesome. So a couple of things that you said that really resonated with me is that I also come from a blended family. My mom had the three of us as a teenage mother. And then she married a guy, or she got with a guy first before they got married, who had three. And then they had one together. So we were the Brady Bunch, and then we added one. So that was very, very interesting. She had two boys and a girl. He had two boys and a girl. And then they had a girl together. So, oh, wow. Yeah. So we ended up, just like having this precious little baby between us. Who's, yeah, she's a grown woman now, but very interesting. Fun times, as you say. Fun times.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. And I'm sure we can tell stories about how that's actually made us resilient in many ways.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
Yeah. And the other thing that I really liked with your introduction was that you said outside of parenting, and that in itself is huge because outside of parenting is a concept that not a lot of mothers understand. Yeah. You know, our life becomes defined by being a parent, right? Yeah. And mothering. Yeah. And so I love that. I love the fact that you you qualified it. You said outside of parenting. So I already said that you're a woman and you have a life. And then you said you hang out with your girlfriends. And I'm like, how do you do that? Please tell me how. That sounds amazing.
I've had such an incredibly beautiful village who make it possible. And also the boys are a little bit older now. And so then I can sneak away for an hour or two and leave them here with some really clear guidance and directions about. Don't burn down. I'll be back.
Nice. Yeah.
I think getting to that outside of parenting part was, I don't remember like how I landed there, but I do have a really vivid memory. This was probably about a year ago. I was in here on the phone with one of my girlfriends, and my oldest, Nehemiah, kept picking his head at my door. And probably after the fifth time, he says, I just want to remind you that you have children. And so I finished talking to my friend, and I called him into my room, and we had to have a little chat about, like, I'm aware that I have children, and also I get to have a whole life outside of you. I love you to the moon and all around the universe and back, but I have my own friends, and I like to talk to my friends sometimes, and that's okay. So yeah,
I love that. I love that for so many reasons, Deidre. One of the reasons is because I too had, I have three adult children and then the little baby, after, you know, a very long time after that I, you know, got married as an older woman and ended up having, you know, another child. But I raised my three on my own as a single mom, very early on, you know, when I separated from their father, they were, 4, 5, and 6 months. So yeah. I've been a single parent for quite some time. And I do remember those conversations, those guilt conversations, you know, that, you know, your sons pop their head in the door. It was never my daughter, mm-hmm. you know, pop, you know, his head in the door to say, what's for dinner? There's nothing on the stove. And I, you know, like those type of, you know, because those guilt moments, I call them, because as a mother, we walk around with so many guilt moments. And then I can actually tell you, which is interesting, I can tell you that those same teenagers that might have popped their head into the door will go out at 16, 17 and leave you on the couch by yourself while they go have fun with their friends. And it starts then and it doesn't end.
Yeah.
And so now grown up men who are married, and I have to take backseat to the wife a lot of times, which is fine, which is the way it should be. And their fathers, you know, I have one that's a father, and completely like living their own life. And so the mom guilt that we experience when things like that happen, I'm glad the way that you handled it, because that's exactly putting it in perspective, because you're not even on this side yet. But I can say on this side, that's exactly what you needed to do, which is say, hey, I'm your mom. I'm here for you. But I'm also Deidre Clark, a whole woman, a whole human being that has to function outside of just being your mama. Because when they start moving on with their lives and doing their thing, you're going to be there rooting for them, but you're never going to be like, hey, what about me? Come back here. Like, no, I can't. Like I said, I take backseat to wives now, which is as it should be. And yeah. So I love that. I really love that, because that does speak to resiliency in motherhood, and very necessary as well.
Yeah, I think so. I'm really, really grateful. I'm sure a lot of that has to do with my journey through therapy. I've been in therapy for years. And so it's helpful to know, or to be able to stand in these truths about, you know, I get to be a mom and a daughter and a sister and an aunt. Oh my gosh, I have a niece. She just turned 5. And I don't care when she calls me. She knows her TT is going to answer the phone. And
go.
She called me 10 times in a row, and I'm going to answer the phone every 10 times she called me. but I also, you know, get to have this completely separate piece of me that I love what you said, right? When it was like, save some for ourselves. Like, yes. I get to save some of me for me too.
I love that. Self-love is so important. It is paramount as we get older. In fact, it is going to be the thing that determines your happiness or your unhappiness. And so I'm glad that you know that you're doing that and you've learned that. And I hope that the ladies and mothers that are watching right now are also understanding it and understanding how important it is. Now tell me, Deidre, you signed up to be a guest.
I did.
Tell me why. What do you want to tell our audience? What do you want to tell these ladies? What is it that you are here to impart?
Give us the
great wisdom, oh wise one.
I mean, I got a story. I don't promise. Like, it is the most wise thing anybody has ever heard.
Okay.
I saw the title, right? The Resilient Mother. And I feel like the last, like, almost 4 years to the day has been one long exercise in being resilient. On August 25th, 2021, I got up to go to work, and I was running behind. And so I'm like, oh, I don't have time to kiss Brian. And so I walked out of the door and I'm like, girl, go back and kiss Brian. So I turn around, and I run back down the hall, and I kiss his face. Like, okay, I'm going to work. I'll see you later.
Who's Brian?
Brian was my partner.
Okay.
And the father of our children.
Yes.
And so I kiss his face, and I'm like, your face is cold. Why is your face cold? Brian. And he died in his sleep.
Stop it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And so then now I have to, like, my cell phone wasn't working. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, how to use his cell phone because he kept it locked. I'm like, oh, wait, I can call 911. And so then my journey and, like, really having to be resilient and, you know, being in the thick of that moment and the paramedics coming. And what I could say to them was, my children are in this room asleep. Do not wake them up. And, you know, getting through that. And then I had to call Brian's mom and I had to call his best friend. And, you know, like, I had to call my mom and my sister and my girlfriend.
The hardest conversations you would ever have.
Yeah. And that first night, Nehemiah, who's the 13-year-old now, his birthday was 2 weeks after Brian died. And so he sat on my bed and laid his head in my lap and he wailed for at least an hour. And he kept asking, why did Dad have to die before my birthday? And I have no answers. I can't make something up. And I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
You know, I look back at that now and just where we are today. And it has been, you know, 4 years of, like, walking them through their grief, walking through my own grief. My oldest son also ended up with an autism and an ADHD diagnosis. And so we are also, like, navigating grief and trying to understand, like, how does this autism and ADHD show up? What are all these things? And things got hard for him at school. And so, oh my gosh, like, what do I do now? And so fortunately, like, I have a friend who does civil rights law and education. And so I'm pulling on my village every which way, because I sat in therapy one day and I told my therapist, I think I'm losing my mind. Like, I don't know that I can hold it together anymore. And her response to me made me roll my eyes and be like, girl, whatever, ain't nobody got time. She says, so what if you do? What do you mean, so what if I do? Who's going to take care of these kids? And she says, you have a village. Like, there are people who love them who will take care of them if it comes to that for you. They won't be uncared for. Okay, I hear what you're saying. And also, like, nobody.
But no.
But no, right. And so, exactly. Yeah, you know, pulling at my village every which way to get what I need to be with the boys in the nights that they are struggling and to be with myself, because, you know, right, I ain't got nobody else right now either. Like, we all together in this mess of grief. And I remember someone said, it won't always hurt this bad. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, I can't get past that. And today I can say it's different. Like,
yeah,
I'm sad. You know, yeah. We miss him. We talk about him all the time. He is still a regular part of our lives. And also I can eat food and I can go hang out with my friends. And sometime in the last year I said, okay, I guess maybe I might try to go out on a date. Like, what?
Why?
And that thing that felt really impossible to me. And the days that I could not, like, drag myself off of the floor, I've landed here. And I still cry about it and it's still hard, but this has been, like, one long lesson and what it means to be resilient. And I told my sister, you know, I'm not a big, huge fan of the way that we often use that term to minimize or to try to tell people, oh, just be strong, just be resilient. Because sometimes it's not that. Like, sometimes you do need to come undone. Like, I didn't lose my mind. But there were plenty of, like, undoings. I think, you know, that also helped me get to this space where I can look back and it's like, oh my gosh, we made it.
You made it.
Yeah.
So funny, because, and thank you so much for coming on and for sharing your story with us, because we didn't expect that, right? And so it's beautiful because it's life and it's unexpected and it's what happens. It's life happens. And what do you do with it when life happens? And can I tell you just really quickly that we also share that in common? So I mentioned being a single mother. And when I walked out, it had been 6 years marriage, three kids, 6 months, 4 and 5. And we were separated for 11 and a half years. And then he died. And so, and he was tragically murdered. And so to be a single parent with a co-parent is very different than to be a single parent when that co-parent is gone.
Yeah.
So we share that in common. And, you know, I was able to really relate to some of the things that you were saying, especially even like eating, like just eating and laughing and not feeling guilty. And, you know, should I be happy? Should I be, how can I be okay? I mean, these kids have lost their father and, you know, this is a huge thing. My ex at the time was 46 years old. So quite young. I think yours probably was younger.
Brian was 42.
Yeah. Okay. So I was just kind of calculating the age of the children. But yeah, that's huge. And so thank you for sharing that with our audience, because, you know, we experience these things and then what happens? And then what happens, you know? And you have to get to a point in your life where you do see the light and you have to follow the light, right? And like you said, when you're in therapy and somebody says that, and that's my background, by the way, as well. But, and I probably wouldn't say that to someone, suppose you do, I wouldn't say that. But what I do think is if I did say it, it would be almost like a motivation for someone to be like, oh no, I don't want to do that. And so it's like, all right, so snap out of it. So I think that might've been what happened to you too, where you're thinking, I don't have the luxury of having a mental breakdown. I don't have the luxury of losing my mind, because if I do, then I have these two people who are really riding on the fact that I'm going to take care of them for as long as I can, unless something happens to me that's completely beyond my control. So let me try to dig as deep as I can to find some resolve, some strength, something to pull me up in order for me to be there for these two people that did not ask to be here because they've lost their other parent. So and people do not understand the pressure that you do feel, but the motivation that you do feel as well, that, you know, look here, I'm it. I can't play. No, I can't get in that car. Somebody's drinking. I'm not doing. No, not going. That's just like simple things that people take for granted. Like, no, I got to get home. I can't go with y'all. Like, and, you know, and so thank you for sharing that, because I really hope that the audience is able to, you know, just dig really deep and find those spaces that we need. And not to labor the point, I'm going to say Cree Summer is a singer, right? She used to be on A Different World. I don't know if you remember, but she has a song. She has a beautiful album, but she has a song. It's called Deliciously Down. And it talks about her sliding to that place where she hurts the least. And I mean, it's such a beautiful song, but the words are so poignant. And I remember that, you know, listening to that song during that time and feeling like, you know, that's sometimes where we need to be. We just need to fall apart. We just need a moment to fall apart. And then in the rubble, we're able to look around and go, okay, how do I piece this back together? How do I piece this back together?
Yeah. And sometimes I don't even know that I can say I was even able to see the pieces. It was really a series of, this is what I have to do right now. The children need food. Okay. They're going back to school. The children need school supplies. And that first year, I couldn't do school supply shopping because Brian and I would shop for school supplies together. And so one of my girlfriends is like, I got it. Don't worry about it. And so she went out and bought all the school supplies and she packed them up and labeled everything. And it was really like one foot in front of the other, kind of clawing back from and out of the rubble. And then sometimes being back in it again. But it really was one day at a time. This is what they need right now. This is what I need right now. And people would ask, what do you need? And the most helpful thing for me was, I need somebody to do dinner.
Yeah.
Don't make me cook dinner. Please don't make me cook. breakfast was a breeze, but having to do dinner while grieving was the most difficult thing on the planet for me. And so then people would send dinner, but it was that daily going and just getting up and doing the things that need to be done, but also like being really clear with my village about what I needed.
Yeah. the people. And having a village. And yeah. having a village. And identifying a village. Because sometimes we actually have a village and we don't realize that we have a village. You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes people think that they're all alone. And when you talk to them, then you start saying, okay, well, what about, well, who's that? Well, could you call that person? Oh, yeah, I could. Oh, yeah, 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 I can call that. Exactly. Because these people would love to be there for you. And sometimes when you are strong, independent women, they think you don't need it. They think you got it. And sometimes you do have to be vulnerable enough for them to know, listen, I don't got it this time. Can you help me with that?
Yeah.
And you'll be surprised if people show up for you.
Absolutely. People will show up. I have some of the most incredible stories of literally people showing up for us that I don't think I could tell them all in this really brief time, but they're just some really incredibly beautiful folks. And so one of the things that Brian left us were his friendships. He had some really incredible friends. And so there were a few that I asked, like, can we fold y'all in? Like, I know Brian is gone. But I would love for us, for me and the boys, to get to know you and for us to have our own relationship with you. And so those people who had not like been like a part of my village, but were folks that Brian loved and knew and depended on, like rolled in. And so
they
became part of the village as well. Right. And so sometimes it is people, you know, and sometimes.
And they got to hold on to him as well as his children got to hold on to him through them.
Yeah.
And they got to hold on to him through his children. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah,
I love
absolutely. That. And so I'm like, there are things that y'all know about Brian. Like he and I were together for 10, maybe 11 years. Like y'all have known him way longer than I have. You have way more stories to tell than I do. And so I want our children to grow up and be able to access that. You know, some of his friends are now our friends and they come see us and the boys go hang out with them and I get mom.
That's awesome.
So yeah.
That's awesome because another thing that I can relate to is how difficult that is when that doesn't happen. So it's almost like that entire part of their life was cut off when he passed away, when their dad passed away. There was no more, you know, his best friends or his band members or his church members. Like there was not even his family. Like it was just gone. Like all they have are my people. And I think that's so I really, really appreciate what you just said, because that's so important for your children.
Yeah.
So important.
I'm so glad that, you know, that, you know, that used to be true and that Brian was, he was just really good with people and building relationships and, you know, just being so genuine. And I think, you know, that is one of the greatest gifts one of the greatest gifts he left us were his friendships. So, yeah.
That is so good. I mean, I love that. I just thank you so much for sharing your story because it's so important. Like I said, we can talk about all of the good stuff and we can talk about, you know, our resiliency and how we learned self-love, which we started talking about. And those things sometimes are easy. Grief is not easy. Grief is I'm a social worker by profession. I have a master's degree in social work. So I've done psychotherapy. I do, you know, casework. I've done management. And the one of the most difficult things for me is dealing with death, dying, and grief, because it is something that is unexplainable, right? Mm-hmm. Like who gets chosen? Like how do your numbers get called? And and so, you know, and to experience that with your grandparent, you know, they're older, they've lived their full life, you know, is one thing. And then to experience that with somebody who had so much life and so much promise per se, and had so much to live for, to lose that person, it is very difficult, you know, to even wrap your mind around it. So to be a part of, to be in the midst of it. And in your case, you're kissing him goodbye. You're kissing him goodbye. And I mean, that's one of the biggest, I guess, shocks that you probably have had in your life up until that point.
Absolutely. If anybody had told me, so I had turned 40, maybe a month or so before he died. And I was so excited about turning 40. Because the women in my life teach me that aging is incredible. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to be 40.
Starts at 40.
I know, it really does. But then Brian dies in 40 was nothing that I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yes.
And
you didn't plan for that.
Absolutely. Like, not on my bingo card ever. Yeah. And you're right. Grief is gritty. I told my therapist one day, I said, you know, grief is like this little spoiled, entitled man, like running through the world with no concern for how his behavior is impacting other people. It's like, yep. I'm sitting here eating some breakfast and here comes grief. It's like, oh, cry right now and keep crying and don't stop crying until I tell you to stop. Like,
yeah,
this is not what I had planned for my day. And, you know, in those really early days, like, there's really nothing you can do but ride the wave.
That's it. Ride the wave. That's the perfect example. Perfect way to describe it. Ride the wave. There's nothing. And it sucks you in. And it's wherever you... I told a friend today, in fact, and it just reminds me of what you're saying. I told her, I said, I spoke with her like 3 days ago. I said, I'm going to call you back. It took 3 days to call her back. I felt like, you know, when you drive up to the bank and you put your transaction into that little thing and it goes to the teller. So that's what it's felt like since I spoke with you last. I felt like I got sucked into something and I'd just been spit out. And she was like, wow. And I think that's what you almost described with grief. It's like you're in there and you can't get out and you're traveling somewhere and you got to stop wherever you stop and you have no control over it. And that is tough. While you're still trying to be somebody's mama.
And they don't understand and they're grieving in their own way. And
we
made it, like, and it blows my mind because I remember like how hard it was in the beginning. Like, I wrote in my journal the first time I felt hungry and I was like, why do I feel hungry? This is wrong. I shouldn't feel hungry. Like, he's only been dead for a month. What does it mean that?
And he can't eat. He can't eat. So how dare you even want to eat? Like, are you going to, is it going to taste good? Like, wow.
Yeah. Like, what does it mean that I'm hungry? Like, surely I'm not recovering. Like, surely this doesn't mean. And so there were, you know, just all these crazy, really low lows. And there was no way anybody could have made me believe that 4 years ago, which, you know, feels like forever. And it's also, you know, considering a lifetime of dropping the bucket, that I could sit here and talk about it and not cry.
Yeah. Because I think even healing, a part of healing feels wrong. It feels like you're betraying somebody, right?
Exactly.
As long as I'm hurting, as long as I'm here in this position, then I'm honoring them. But if I step over here, then am I forgetting them? Did I forget that they exist? It's tough. Grief is a hot mess.
A hot one.
Hot mess.
I would not recommend it, but since we ain't got no choice.
Oh gosh, definitely wouldn't recommend it. But if you're in it right now, if you're watching this and you're in it or a friend is in it, send this to them and let them know it's okay. And just know it is okay. It is okay to feel every single thing that you're feeling. And it's okay to want to feel better. That is okay too. Because one thing that I was able to do, and I think the beauty of it, because I was like 38 at the time, so I was pretty young. I hadn't even turned 40 yet. And I remember understanding that it was just the end to his story on Earth. And that's it. That is how I reconciled it. It's the end of his story on Earth. However, his story existed. And so if we could celebrate his story, if we could continue, and I love that you say you talk about him all the time, you and your boys, he's well alive in your life, his tribe's a part of your life, because that's the only thing that I was able to really, as a counselor myself, I was no help to myself. But at some point I was able to say that was his story. So for 46 years, you know, and for the 8 years that we were together and what we created in this world would continue, and to honor that. And I think that's the important part. Because you always, when it comes to grief, you always want more. You always are thinking about what they're missing, what they could have had, what was planned, what we thought we were going to do, what we had done, where we were going, what we were building, and it's done. It's cut short. Boom, like a tree. Done. It's gone. So yeah. Now what do you do with that? Right? Yeah. But to look back and celebrate all of it and be thankful that God gave them that.
Yeah.
Regardless of how much more you want it, because you can't have it. It's done. And I think that was the only thing that I was able to do. And going forward, it helped when my father passed away. You know, my father was in his 70s, young 70s. He got cancer. He looked like the picture of health. He could have lived to 100, you know. But just understanding that's the end of our story. That's the end of our story. But the story was amazing. The story was amazing. And I think if someone is watching this today, or, you know, people that are watching, just to understand that that's what grief does. But it does get better.
It does.
It can get better.
Yes.
It will get better.
Yeah. 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 It will. It will get better. It can get better. It does get better. That is, you just keep going one day after the other, one day at a time.
Yes. And thank you. Thank you for coming on to the Resilient Mother Podcast and for sharing that with us and for sharing such a personal story, but also the personal triumph of the story, the resilience of it while mothering, because that's the part. It's like the things that we have to do while mothering, but also taking care of yourself outside of mothering. So while mothering, but outside of mothering, because you'll always be a mother. You'll always, you know, they're my heart, my goodness, my three, I call them my babies, all three of them. A lady told me one day, she said, "You always call your kids babies. You shouldn't call them babies, because it sounds like you've made them small, you know, and you've made them helpless." I said, "No, they'll always be my babies." Sorry, I don't know what you're going with this, but they're my babies. You know? Right.
From scratch.
Yeah, is it right? Hello, I've been a part of this for a while. And saying that they're my babies is just really that endearment term for me. Like, y'all will always be right here with me, regardless of where we go, where we grow. But at the same time, allowing them to live their lives and thrive. Yeah. And being able to get back up, even when life gives you a knock that you have not expected, you wouldn't have planned. One of the worst knocks that you would have even imagined, but being able to crawl your way up stand strong.
I don't want to finish without saying about the boys. I learned a lot from them. I needed to stay sad. They did a really good job of being sad and crying when they wanted to cry and then getting up to go play
and be kids. Yeah.
And they didn't carry this same, "Oh, I can only be sad all the time." Like, I can be sad. And also I can have moments where I don't feel sad.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to get there, but they modeled it for me first.
Good.
Yes. Like, as a mom, I have had to be really resilient. And also, it is incredible to see, continually to see it in the boys too, in the way that they grow and mature with their grief. And they'll sometimes come in here and they'll sit down. It's like, "I really miss Dad today." It's like, "Well, do you want to look at some videos? Do you want to look at some pictures? Do you want to tell me your favorite dad story? Do we want to read some of his poems?" Because Brian was a poet. And so then they decide what they need. And we do that. And when they are done, they are done.
Yeah.
And I just think they're incredible. So.
And that's great. And that's great that you learn so much from them, because we do learn from them. And so so my first book that I wrote is called I'm Somebody's Mama. You said you're a reader, so check it out.
I will.
I'm Somebody's Mama. And there is one piece in that about, you know, losing my baby daddy. That's what I called him. I called it, "That's just my baby daddy." And so, just cause it was funny, but, it, you know, it's about that. And the book in itself just teaches, I think just talks a lot about the things we learn from our children. So we're not just teaching them, we're learning every day. And those are beautiful lessons. And, the Bible does say that the little children shall lead them, you know? And so for you to have been able to gain that strength from your children, because even when you did want to sit down, because that was another thing too. And then throughout life, when you just want to sit down and do nothing, they're like, are we going to the park? are we going to the movies? Are we? And it's like, yeah, I guess I got to, you know, I got to get up. Right. And so it forces you to keep moving, to keep living. So that's incredible. And let me tell you, it's only going to get better with those boys, with those babies, because the relationship that you're building right now with them is going to, it's going to render, it's going to, the returns that you get back on that are going to be amazing. I have four of them. One is 2.8, but my three adult children are my best friends, hands down, period. There are three people that think I am the bee's knees, and nobody can't tell them any different. And don't nobody love me like that, period.
Yeah.
You know, I have a great husband. He loves me, and we have a great relationship. Them three, trust me, that's my best friend. So you
right.
are
in I look forward friend. To it. Because you're a teenager right now.
You're putting in the work. Well, I tell you what, don't sleep on them, teenagers. Don't sleep on the honey. I had to sleep by the door. I turned a window in. I turned a door into a window at one point at my house. I was like, you cannot be in and out. No, put the. I brought the construction people. I was like, just fill up that door right there. That's just the window now, because I kept hearing it going in and out. Yes, and I live in the islands too, so it's in the Cayman Islands, by the way. So it's a pretty safe place. But I just kept hearing doors, and I was like, wait a minute, just what are these grown people coming in and out? They were like 15, 16.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, no, you come through the front door. But you know what? Let me just change this, because I thought I was gonna do something. So I had to put a window there. So it was very interesting. And just getting through that, you know, getting through that stage, but then getting to safety. I call it safety. So that's where you are right now. I think you're going to be all right. I think you're in tune with them. And this journey that you have been through, this grief journey that has brought you to where you are, it set you up for amazing things and amazing blessings. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Now, I don't know what you do in your real life. Do you help people with grief? Do you work with any grief groups, or is there anything that you want to do with this?
So I don't. So what happened, like for me personally, was I learned a different way of showing up for people. So a lot of my grief journey has informed like how I show up for my friends, but also just kind of how I show up in general in public spaces. And so what I most enjoy right now is creating tools to help people like reconnect with themselves. Nice. Before Brian died, I trained as an ICF certified life coach. And then I didn't have the emotional bandwidth for that. And so I do like to just kind of sit sometimes and be with people. It's like, oh, actually I made this thing, or I can make this for you that might help you think through that some and decide what to do. And then I'm writing. I am writing about what this whole journey has been like.
Awesome. I think that's great. I think that's going to be a great book. And it definitely, whatever you decide to do with it, do, you know, reach back out to us, and we'd love to have you on for that. We are going to drop your information in the comments and not the comments, but the description segment. And we'll let you know when it's going to be going. And we want you to share it with your tribe and Brian's tribe and everybody's tribe, because that beautiful smile has got to be shared with the world. And I'm so glad you have it. I'm so glad you found it. And I thank you once again for being my guest on the Resilient Mother Podcast. We're excited to bring stories like yourself every single week, talking to mothers who are in the thick of things and just dealing with normal stuff that, you know, that day-to-day stuff, but also things that just knock you upside the head and got you spinning around like a cartoon and then going, oh gosh, what just happened? And figuring it all out. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it. You have a great evening, day, whatever. I thought you were from Birmingham, United Kingdom, but you said, no, honey, it's Birmingham, Alabama.
I'm over here in the deep south.
Yes, absolutely. And so if we're in your neck of the woods, we're going to look you up.
Absolutely.
All right. You take care.
Okay, I will. You too. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for joining us today. Please don't forget to subscribe so we can share this message. We are a worldwide podcast with guests all around the world, and we want to continue to grow this community. You can find us on socials. You could also be a guest. Look for that link below if you'd be interested in being a guest on the podcast. If you know a sponsor or would like to be a sponsor, please reach out to me or Catherine as well.
Sure. We want you all on this journey. We want to hear your stories. We want to share your stories. We want to gain strength from each other because together we're stronger. And to never forget the blessing of being a mother and what we're creating. We're creating the future every single day of our lives. So get on this train with us and let's do this thing, moms.
I believe in you. I believe in yourself. God bless. And we'll see you around. Take care.